Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo, always joined by Boris Nikolov. You're listening to us on South Florida's business station, 880 AM The Biz. Also available online, www.880thebiz.com. And don't forget, you can download the app at 880thebiz.com. We are live every Friday at 2 p.m. And you can listen to us through Alexa by saying, Alexa, play 880 The Biz. We have had some powerful topics and incredible guests over the course of the last months. We have talked about abuse, how to overcome it, post-traumatic stress disorder, its symptoms, available treatments, and we have talked about mental health problems and many others. But today, I'm excited to say, first of all, how are you, Boris?
Yeah. Hi. Great. Thank you for having me.
So we are, Boris is here with me, like always. We do everything together, but we do have a very special guest today, and I'm excited to say. His name is Mike Bride, and he is a child abuse survivor, an advocate for child abuse and mental health awareness, as well as a blogger and social media enthusiast. Mike grew up in a dysfunction and alcoholic, sometimes violent father left him vulnerable to being molested by another family member, which went on for years. As an adult, he dealt with major depression and disassociation, including fugue states. After much healing, he now lives in Louisiana with his wife, works in legal technology field, and has been sharing what he learns online about childhood abuse and mental health issues throughout his blogs at www.childabusesurvivor.net since 2001. And more recently on social media accounts like Twitter at Survivor Network and Facebook at www.facebook.com/childabusesurvivor and Instagram at childabusesurvivor.net. Mike, how are you? Please tell us a little bit about you.
I am doing well. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Thank you.
So a little about me. as I said, I am. I actually just turned 50 last year, so I'm getting up there in age and reaching that point in life where I'm thinking more about the impact that I can have while I am still here. And one of the things that has always been near and dear to me. As you said, I started my blog in 2001. So before social media was social media, you know, I was online.
Wow.
And the big thing for me has always been, and you know, whenever I feel like I don't want to do that anymore, or I don't have anything to say, or you know, I've written everything, there's nothing new. Is I always go back to thinking about what it was like when I was healing. When I had spent some time in a hospital with physical illness, and really was alone, right, in a lot of ways. And I remember thinking, you know, basically the only thing I had was a bedroom in my parents' house where I was recovering and a computer. Right. And I remember thinking that, well, you know, I got online, I connected with other people who were dealing with mental health issues, who were survivors. And when I started the blog, my initial idea was simply, look, if I'm a survivor, I'm somebody dealing with child abuse, whether I'm a child, an adult, and I get online, I want there to be someplace they can go and just see that they are not the only ones dealing with this.
And that's so important. It's interesting that you should say that, because I think God protects the innocent. And as children, we may not have a lot of symptoms, and we don't really know what's going on. We don't realize it's wrong. But as adults, it does hit us. And it's important to have a support system. It's important. I mean, for me, it was helpful for me to write a book and to finally provide transparency and awareness, in the sense that I felt that it would help others. And you know, something interesting I wanted to talk to you about, what were the effects of abuse on adulthood for you? How were you able? What was the point in which you found a way to heal? What was the pivotal point? Because I know for me, I struggled a lot throughout the years, and I fumbled and I failed. And it was a lot of trial and error, and it was a lot of prayer and turning to God. And when I finally took God seriously, that was my pivotal point. That's where my life turned around. What was it for you?
It's interesting that you should say that. I've written before about the fact that looking at my life, looking at the lives of, and I'm sure you can attest to this, the lives of other survivors, one of the things that we tend to forget is that we were so busy just surviving that we didn't develop, right? We didn't get the childhood development that we should have gotten. So when we get to an adulthood, there are a lot of skills we were supposed to know.
Yeah.
We don't know, right? We were so busy just trying to live through what was happening that, you know, things like social skills and holding down a job and just navigating the world are massively confusing to us.
It's more challenging, because I've actually read articles that say that when you're abused as a child, especially long term, it can actually change the chemistry of your brain, where you tend to even have less impulse control, you have less emotion control. So it's just a little extra effort we have to make.
It is. And for me, so the turning point for me is I vividly remember this session. I was in therapy. I had just really bad time with major depression, with dissociation. I had even gone missing for a month, which is always a good time. And I remember sitting with my therapist. My therapist was looking at me kind of like, after all of this had gone on, after we had talked about the abuse, talked about my upbringing, and she just looked at me and said, "What do you want your life to look like now?" And I was like, I've never thought about that. Like, I've never felt like I had permission to think about that. And she was like, "You're 29 years old. You can do this." Right. And it was really the first time where I thought, wait, I'm an adult. I can learn these skills. I can take responsibility, and I can create whatever life I want. Right. There's nobody holding me back anymore. And so that was really, for me, that was one of the, it was challenging because it was scary.
I think she made it your own. She had it come to your reality, because I do understand a little bit about this, actually a lot about dissociation and fugue state. But for the listeners that may not know much about this, can you tell us a little bit about your experience and the symptoms?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you guys know this, but just for the benefit of everyone else, probably one of the best explanations I ever got about dissociation was from a doctor. Because after I had my first experience with a fugue state as an adult, I literally had no idea what happened. I was just like, what was that? and he sat down and he said, look, here's what dissociation looks like. He said, you know, there's a spectrum. There's serious dissociation, there's not so serious dissociation, and everything in between, right? So an example of not so serious dissociation is what we commonly refer to as highway hypnosis, right?
Okay.
Where you drive the same route to work every day, you don't think about it, you don't pay any attention to it. Like you get to work and you're like, huh, I have no memory of driving to work. Right? My mind was busy with other stuff, and I literally don't remember driving here.
How did I get here?
And yeah, like I don't remember how doing that.
I know that one.
And then all the way, no, go ahead.
Yeah, I know that one. I was just saying.
Yeah, we all know that one, right? We've all done that. on the other end of it, then you get into things like multiple personality disorders and identity disorders, where you're literally creating multiple lives and multiple people inside of you. Right now, fugue states live somewhere in the middle of that. And what happens with a fugue state is that you enter a dissociated, like you are not yourself. You've kind of disconnected emotionally, everything else. Fugue states, for some reason, are also tend to be tied into travel very often. Like people who are struggling from a fugue state just sort of wander off. And no one really, I've never heard a really good explanation as to why, other than we just kind of forget where we're supposed to be. And that's really what happened to me. Is I was at the time going through a very stressful, I was in a bad marriage. Things were very stressful. I was working, going to school. And the skills I had learned, again, as a child, instead of learning how to deal with stress and healthy ways to deal with stress, I dissociated. Right? Because when I was a kid, that's what I did. Right? When things got too hard, when it was too much, I just kind of turned my brain off.
So you just separated yourself from yourself.
Exactly. I describe it as the difference between being somewhere and watching it on TV.
And just going outside yourself, because I remember throughout when I was in therapy, whenever I had to talk about my abuse, I can speak about it, no problem, as if I was telling a story about somebody else. I didn't really connect it to me. And that was how I experienced dissociation. And as far as a fugue state, I did go to Bulgaria for 2 years. So I might be familiar with both of them.
I just sort of got in the car and drove to Los Angeles, right? And I have no memory of getting there. It's kind of like, hey, I'm living on the streets of Los Angeles. I don't know how this happened, but okay.
That's funny, but you know, there is a lot of things that can come along that can just, you know, show up in adulthood. You live your life normal, you ignore it, you think it's not there, you minimize it, and then one day it hits you. And then when it hits you, you're confused, you're full of pain, you try to self-medicate, and you do all kinds of dangerous behaviors, because for some reason we tend to develop negative coping mechanisms. But see, here's my little idea, that the mind is a very powerful thing, and you can choose. God gives us a will. You can choose to be miserable about something or a situation, or you can try to make the best out of it. Not that it's going to change, not that it's going to get easier, but if you make the best out of it, you spend your time better.
Oh, absolutely. There is a certain, there's something about getting perspective and understanding. Like I said, those skills we were supposed to learn as kids, right? The way we were supposed to learn about our place in the world and perspective of the whole world, right? Those things just sort of get short-circuited. And when you don't have that, everything, you know, the biggest thing for me when I finally realized what has happened was just the shame. I don't understand what just happened to me. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I did, and I'm ashamed of it. I don't want anyone to know.
I remember watching Leaving Neverland, and one of the men said at the end, he said, we're still kids. We're just a little older. Could it be that maturity was stunted? I don't know, because I know that innocence definitely was at least taken away. And, you know, these things, we learn to deal with it, because I remember reading, I go on social media a lot, and I was seeing on Facebook a support group that was saying, oh, my therapist told me that I have to change my negative dialogue to a positive dialogue. But who does that? The therapist is not going to do it for you. And when you're feeling bad and you're thinking negative, not even a friend could do it for you. It's got to be you. You got to change your own dialogue. And the healing process could be a very slow process. I know it took me a long time. I mean, let's say 25 years. So, but those who are just joining us in, this is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. And we are focusing on various topics, particularly mental health, abuse, trauma, treatment options. Today, we're joined by Mike McBride, and we're talking about abuse survival. And I have a song for you. Just remember, we're all not perfect. We all have issues, and it's okay. We have to love unconditionally. And this is Issues.
I'm jealous, I'm overzealous. When I'm down, I get real down. When I'm high, I don't come down. I get angry, baby, believe me. I can love you just like that, and I can leave you just as fast. But you don't judge me, 'cause if you did, baby, I'd judge you too. No, you don't judge me, 'cause if you did, baby, I'd judge you too. 'Cause I got issues, but you got them too. So give them all to me, and I'll give mine to you. Bask in the glory of all our problems, 'cause we got the kind of love it takes to suffer. Yeah, I got issues, and one of them is how bad I need you. You get mad and you break things, feel bad, try to fix things, but you're perfect, poorly wired circuit, and got hands like an ocean, push you out, pull you back in. 'Cause you don't judge me, 'cause if you did, baby, I would judge you too. No, you don't judge me, 'cause you see it from the same point of view. 'Cause I got issues, but you got them too. So give them all to me, and I'll give mine to you. Bask in the glory of all our problems, 'cause we got the kind of love it takes to solve. Yeah, I got issues, and one of them is how bad I need you.
I got issues, you.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
I got issues, but you got them too. So give them all to me.
Welcome back to the show. For those that have just joined us, this is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov and a very special guest, Mike McBride. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
You're still with us. Great. I think yes. Dr. Boris has some questions for you. And
yeah,
he's
hi, Mike.
Actually a fan of yours. We have to let you know that we've seen your posts and we've seen your articles. And I've learned a lot, actually. I learn a lot from others like us, believe it or not. That's a good thing. We have an understanding that we can share with others, at least the good parts, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, hi, Mike. How are you? Thank you for being here.
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Great. Yeah, this is, I guess, an important part of the work that you guys do, you and Amy, that you are showing the situations with abuse and how people can survive. So one of the most important topics, actually, that I read in your blogs before was the issue of guilt. To me, at least, and you mentioned it earlier. So I guess it's very popular in people that have suffered abuse to blame themselves. Obviously, they are not guilty of anything. The perpetrators are. But then how do you go from feeling guilty to
forgiving yourself?
We could talk about this all day.
Yeah,
it's an excellent question. And it is really, I believe it is one of the core issues that abuse survivors face. And to me, there are a couple of areas that are a bit of trouble. One is just a societal thing, right? Our culture, our in some cases our religious institutions. Not that I'm not a fan of religious institutions in general, but in some cases, what we hear often is that good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people, and we kind of just forget that, you know, sometimes just things happen.
I thought bad things happen to good people.
Exactly. It's not about you, right? When we look at something like a terrorist attack, or we don't sit there and thinking, oh, well, you know, those people kind of asked for it. That's not what we think. And yet somehow in our interpersonal relationships, that's the message that gets into our head that, oh, you know, here I am, a kid. These bad things are happening to me. This must be something I did. It must be something I am, which is even worse than something I did. And that is a really, really tough thing to work out. You have to start first and foremost with just accepting that it wasn't your fault, right? You were a child. You did not have a choice. In the matter, right? And then you also, for a lot of people, especially when you talk about sexual abuse, you have to acknowledge a little bit of what happened, you know, not to get into details on the radio or anything, but you have to acknowledge a little bit of what happened. You have to acknowledge, you know, the reactions you may have had or your body may have had to what was happening, and forgive yourself for that. Right. And that is such a hard thing to do because we know what happened, right? We feel these things and we feel these ideas. But it is. And like you said, Amy, this is the part that takes a long time, right? Because we are relearning very basic core things to our personalities. And it is hard. I don't even pretend to tell people that that's not hard. It is.
Right. Right. Well, it's important that we talk about it, because the more we talk about it, the more people will, in my opinion, people will realize how horrible child abuse is and actually start to preventing it. Because in my opinion, a lot of people just kind of ignore it. It's either too hard for them to talk about it, or, oh, we're going
to
offend somebody.
Too hard to listen to.
Too hard to listen to. But
and then the stigma, and there's a lot of other things for which people stay quiet. But I understand what you're talking about, Mike, because for a very, very long time, I thought I was a bad person. And the guilt and the shame, I think, is really what keeps you from healing. Because once you're grounded and you get to the realization of what actually happened and that it's not your fault and that, okay, it did hurt you. And it did affect you in some way. And there's things that you need to work on. And there's things that you can do better. And it's okay if you need help, if you need to go to a psychiatrist, if you need medication. And know that there will be a support system. There's people around you. God does touch people's hearts.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing at all, and you're alone in the world like I was, with no family whatsoever until I was 27 from 15, I had no one. So my strength was God. I turned to God. And my support system, what my friends, yeah, they were supporting me with self-medicating.
Providing the medication.
Huh? So it just comes to show. It took a long time, and I went through a lot of things, and I even went through 3 nuns that told me to read the story of Job. But for me, trying to keep the faith and trying to be faithful and trying and praying, eventually it took a lot of time. I'd say 25 years of suffering, but eventually I was blessed like never before. And now things don't really bother me. Things will go wrong, okay? Things that used to frustrate me, I just look at the bright side of it. If I'm stuck in traffic and I'm really annoyed by a car going really slow or something like that, I say, wow, how nice. I get to appreciate the surroundings even more. I can look at the houses. I can look at the trees. I can look for birds. I can look at the nature, but please keep an eye on the road also.
Yeah. Don't get too carried away with that.
But I try to, you know, compensate. And I look for the bright side of things. Or I find a way that I don't let it bother me. And I've learned from stories that I've read on Facebook, from stories that I've seen, that, like I was going to say, there's people that are very close to God and nothing hurts them because they have so much faith. Even if their child dies, they're okay with it. This child's going to heaven. Why should I suffer? I admire those people. I don't know how they do it. But I thought, if they can do that, I can do anything.
And I think what you speak to and what Boris was talking about as well, right? I think that's why it's so important that there are voices, right? There are people like you, Amy, like my blog, like the hundreds of people that I interact with on social media all the time, who are out there talking about it. Because I think one of, you know, for whatever reason, again, the way our brains work, you know, it's easier to look at someone else, right? A lot of times it's easier to look at someone else and say, oh, they were abused as a child. That wasn't their fault, right? We don't internalize the messages the same way. And so the more of that's out there, right, the more I can see, okay, right, there are a lot of people who've been through this. There are a lot of people who are going through this, who have healed, who are still, you know, early in the process of healing. It's not just me, right? This isn't something that just happened to me because I'm terrible, right? This is something that happens to millions of people around the world. I can't pass judgment on all these people. They're not that bad, right? And in fact, I wrote this blog post years ago. It's been one of the best ones I ever did. And it was basically because I'm a little bit of a math geek. I took the current statistics, right, and I looked at, like, sexual abuse. So, look, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys have been sexually abused before the age of 18. It is almost statistically impossible that you don't know someone who is a survivor.
Exactly. That's a lot of people. I mean,
yeah.
And the thing that I found, at least personally, that it was so easy for me to have compassion for other people or other situations, or if I saw something on TV that was sad, I will cry. Or if I know something bad is happening to someone, I no problem, compassion. But compassion for myself? Are you kidding me? I'm not good enough. And I read on social media, a psychologist, some blog or something that says it's important to have self-compassion, that part of you that has compassion for others, use it for yourself. And that's another part, a good part of healing, just realizing that you are just as worthy, that we're all the same, that we're all equal under God's eyes, and that, you know, just because we've been through challenges in life doesn't make us less capable. But hey, those who are tuning in, this is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. You're listening to The Cure. We're live every Friday at 2 p.m. And I just want to, you know, reiterate how important it is to be there for yourself, but also to have a support system. It's important that you try to surround yourself with people that will lift you up, not bring you down. This is Sober Up by AJR.
Hello, hello, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I hope that you're missing me, 'cause it makes me feel young. Hello, hello, last time that I saw your face was recess in second grade,
and it made me feel young. Won't you help me sober up? Growing up, it made me numb, and I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me sober up? All the big kids, they got drunk, and I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me feel something? Bestest buds, we said that we keep in touch, and we did our best. All my new friends, we smile at party time, but soon we forget to smile at anything else. Won't you help me sober up? Growing up, it made me numb, and I wanna feel something again. And I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me feel something again? How's it go again? How's it go again?
My favorite color is you. You're vibrating out my frequency.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
We're back. Thanks for joining us. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Today, we're joined by Boris Nikolov and our special guest, Mike Bride. This is 880 The Biz. And Mike and Boris, let's see which one of you want to answer this. And I think, Mike, you might have the best answer for this, but I think we all have a little bit of experience with this. I lightly touched on having a support system, surrounding yourself by good influences that, you know, we really can't do things alone. We're not an island. We do need each other. We do need people. But for a long time, I was alone from like 15 to 27. And my friends were just for self-medicating, and they had no idea what I had gone through in the past. And I was just happy and fun for them. And I was just really avoiding the issues and having negative coping mechanisms. So because I did not have a support system, and I suppose there is victims that don't have a support system, that once you become a victim, life gets harder for you and you may lose your support system. You may lose what you have. And what do you do then? Then what I did was I prayed. I turned to God and I noticed God uses people. He uses animal. He uses social media. He uses songs. Like the songs I play, these songs I choose them particularly because they've helped me. So I play them for whoever's listening to see if it helps them. But social media has been a big part of my education and just inspirational speeches and testimonials that are real, not testimonials of my life has always been perfect, but testimonials that are shocking that I absolutely can't believe that. And music has been very important to me. So I wanted to know, how were you able to create a support system? Did you have one? Were you able to use social media effectively? Did it help you, Mike?
I know that the more nuanced response to understanding social media is that it can be good, it can be bad, it can be everything in between. and if you ask me on any given day, I might give you any of those answers depending on what I've seen. It can help. I do believe that having some of those social media tools are a good way. I know, for example, I spent about 5 years traveling for a living. It was very hard to keep in touch with people. So having something like Facebook where I could, you know, even if it was the middle of the night here, you know, I could post something and people would see it and kind of know what was going on with me, and I could kind of keep up with what was going on with them. So I think there is some possibilities there to use social media. But you have to kind of avoid the bad things about social media. You have to be very, to borrow the word mindful, or you have to be mindful about what you're doing and who you're following, and not just start clicking on things because, you know, Facebook suggests you should. that's a rabbit hole none of us need to go down.
Yes.
But I do think that is one tool that can be used. I worry that the other day I was listening to a podcast, an interview with an expert. He talked about how, you know, studies are showing that we are, as a society, are as lonely as we've ever been in history.
Wow.
Which is shocking, right? With all the ways we have to keep in touch, we just don't, right?
Wow.
Well, I guess definitely the social media is a place that you can use support groups, even much easier than, you know, getting out of your home and going somewhere. Instead, you just type a post to certain groups that can understand you or be there for you in case that you need it.
Well, for me, when my daughter almost got killed and she was in a 24-day coma, and for those 24 days, we didn't know if she'd live or survive. I mean, she'd live or die. And I just put things in God's hand, but God doesn't really talk back to me. So I just would journalize everything that I felt, everything that was going on with my daughter. And for me, that was therapeutic. And just to see an outpouring of support, asking for prayers, and knowing that people were praying and that people cared helped me not feel alone in my suffering, helped me get through that. And that's how I find social media important, because also, I read blogs, I read articles, and, you know, in social media, you have to choose the right avenues. Just like in life, you have to choose the right friends.
You're right.
And believe it or not, we do have the Holy Spirit. We do know the difference.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you're right. I recall a few years back when my grandmother passed away, and you know, my cousins and I live in various parts of the country. But that night we were all on Facebook kind of talking to one another and sharing memories of my grandmother. And it was wonderful. It still brings tears to my eyes, right?
Right.
Nice.
Because it really did help to be able to just interact as a group, right? And to plan on getting to the funeral, and for those of us who could, and for those of us who couldn't, to still be able to take part in that. So like I said, those tools can be wonderful for those sorts of things. It could be wonderful for educational purposes, right? You got to be careful.
You have to be careful. Yes.
It's also wonderful for the person that doesn't believe in God or doesn't have God as a support, and then they have the social media and friends. There's different mm-hmm. ways. That's why I invite all kinds of people and all kinds of testimonials, because I know what worked for me, and I can attest to that. But it may not work for someone else, and we can all bring something to the table, I believe. Especially since
Absolutely.
Now we're coming upon April, and I don't know if you're aware of this, guys, but April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. So why don't we discuss some ways to prevent child abuse? And
Absolutely.
You know, because it's important. It happens for a long time with kids because they don't know what's wrong. And I can tell you, my kids know what's wrong. And I have an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. And I think prevention is super important. What do you think about this, Mike? What are your thoughts?
I always struggle with this, right? I write about this quite frequently, and every time I do, I always feel like I have to preface it with, I don't have kids, right? there's that little bit in the back of my head that's like, oh, don't get parental advice. Don't get parental advice. You don't have kids, right? but as a survivor, right? And so instead of taking the parental advice approach, let's talk about this as a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. As a survivor, there are things that I know about my experience. There are things that, you know, again, having educated myself and looked at studies, looked at interviews of pedophiles, looked at interviews of actual, you know, predators. We know Wow. that there are things that someone who's trying to take advantage of a child look for, right? We know that they look for kids who are vulnerable, right? Kids
Shy.
Who are good at keeping secrets.
Mm-hmm. Quiet.
Shy, quiet, broken homes.
That was me.
We know that they're going to look for these things. What they don't want is a kid who has an open relationship with their parent and tells them everything that goes on. Right. It's the last thing a predator is going to look for. Right. So that's really what we want to, when we talk about the outside of the family, right. Which is a little bit different than inside the family. But when we talk about the outside the family risks, right. The best way to make it less likely that your child's going to be targeted is to make them less of a target, right? To have an open relationship with them, have a good relationship with them, teach them what's right, what's wrong. So that I always kind of the statement I've made multiple times is, hey, if you're not teaching your kid about all of these things, someone else will.
Yeah.
Well, especially
and you might not want that.
Especially if they don't fear the parent. I couldn't have an open relationship with my parents because I feared my mother, and I don't believe in corporal punishment. And some say I'm not strict enough, but it's better than my kids fearing me. And my kids do talk to me. Now the boy, my 13-year-old talks more to his father, but my daughter tells me everything, and she's very outspoken. And mm-hmm. yes, we have to be extra careful with those kids that are just a little bit more introverted or shy, or don't speak much, because these predators are opportunists. They
Absolutely.
See an opportunity and they will take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we also have to, I think one of the things we have gotten so wrong over the years is that we have done things, like we have taught people stranger danger, and we have created the registry of sexual offenders, right? And I'm not saying those are bad things, but they're only getting the 10%. That's right. 90% of kids who are abused by people they know, right? 60% by people in their family.
Wow. That's
protecting them against strangers, it's not a bad thing, but you're only hitting the tip of the iceberg, mm-hmm. right? You have to also be aware of the people around you. Be aware of even within your own family.
Yeah, that's actually more likely. Sorry to interrupt you. You're right. That's actually the more likely people that can abuse our children. Because that's, yeah. You're right. Sorry
Absolutely.
I mean, no one is no one. Absolutely no one. Not even me. No one, not even the mother. I've explained that to my kids. No one can make you feel uncomfortable or touch in the wrong places. You're private. I'm very clear with them. Not me, not your dad, not your uncle, not nobody. Nobody is nobody, and you have to make that clear. And if they do, you must tell somebody and must tell me right away. Yeah. Somebody like a teacher.
And you want to look, you want to look for just abnormal signs. Sorry, is there somebody who's, you know, trying to spend a little too much time alone with a kid? You know, taking them places or paying a little too much attention, right? Not that, again, I have nieces and nephews. I spoil the hell out of them, right?
I had a friend come over. I had a friend come over and tickle my 11-year-old daughter in the belly, like tickle, tickle. And she's like, you can't do that. I'm bigger now. You're not allowed to tickle me in the belly. You can give me a hug.
Good for her.
So she's good, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, prevention is very important. I think the most important thing is education. Education is key. So many things could have been prevented. When I said something when I was 7 years old and my mother kicked my father out, I thought it was my fault. I didn't know it was wrong. My father did a really good job about grooming me and believing me what he wanted me to believe. And kids are very influenced and they're very easily manipulated. Mm-hmm. So how do you fight this? You fight this? Yes, you're right. I didn't know about that. And thank you for that. Open communications. Thank God I'm doing that, but I didn't know that was important. Yes, that's very important. And also education. Kids need to know about these things because the statistics are very high. It's a very real thing that we need to talk about today. And the more we talk about it, the more we realize it's not such a taboo. It's not so bad. It can be therapeutic. It can be like an injury that we had, like a knee injury that we're talking about. Why do we have to be ashamed of it or be embarrassed of it? It doesn't need to be that way. In fact, we can be proud that we survived it.
Absolutely. Surviving what I've survived, right? That is an amazing accomplishment, right? And people who survive childhood abuse, no matter what it was, because it was different for all of us, mm-hmm. Should be proud of that, right? We shouldn't be ashamed of it. We should actually, and I know this is such a high, a far reach for a lot of people, right? But we should be proud. We survived it, right? We survived something horrible, and we are still here.
And it's important, even if you're at a time that you're feeling bad or you're feeling depressed or stuff like that, and you feel like, oh, I don't do what I used to, or I've lost interest in that, baby steps, little by little. Mm-hmm. Be proud of what you can do. Don't get mad at what you weren't able to do. Don't get disappointed at yourself. I'm sure the devil likes that. No, be proud of yourself. Say, hey, I did this. Hey, I can do this. Believe in yourself. And because if there's somebody like you that you've been through what you've been through and look at you today, you're married, you're happy, you're successful. Look at me today. We're not the exception. This can be everybody. And this can be most of us. And that's what I try to do, is try to find different ways that we can find to hear ourselves, because ultimately it's really up to us. And Mike, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Thank you so much. You're a world of information. And I don't know, let me give your website again so they can read your blogs, because I think they're interesting.
Yeah. And all the other stuff is linked from the website, so you don't have to read all of them again.
Okay, yeah. So guys, if you go to the website, www.childabusesurvivor.net, excellent blogs. I'd love for you guys to learn some things too. I have. And this is the end. And I guess talk to you guys again next Friday. This is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. You're listening to 880 AM The Biz. Remember, guys, be honest to yourself. Be honest to others. This is Bad Liar by Imagine Dragons.
My dear, it's been a difficult year.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.